Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 186, Top 5 Quotes. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the Embo to my Cad Bane. We have Carl LeClaire.
Hashtag spoiler alert.
What?
Oh, what?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, good, then don't pay attention.
Yes, you didn't hear anything.
Jason, it's been way too long since you've been in the Wampa's Lair.
Yes, well, it's way too long since we've been in the Wampa's Lair together.
Exactly. Yes, you got your Phoenix Comic Con panel up last week, which was great. Awesome hearing you alongside Joey and Kyle. I'm a huge fan of Joey Lutz, and Kyle's he'll forever be a co-pilot. just kidding. I love Kyle.
It's Kyle Baca.
I mean, I know you had so much fun at Phoenix Comic Con, and I'm jealous. That looked like a blast. And yes. I plan on doing Boston Comic Con for the first time this summer, but it still doesn't look like anything compared to Phoenix Comic Con.
Phoenix Comic Con has gotten huge.
It looks big.
There was a press release that was emailed out to everybody who went, thanking everybody for coming and giving us like the final total numbers of everybody that went. And they're doing a new way of like documenting all the numbers now to sort of keep it in line a bit more with like San Diego Comic Con and everything. So the same type of way that they highlight all the numbers. And one of the things that they were telling us was the number of unique people who came to the convention, whether or not that's the 4-day passes or, you know, just 1-day passes, that sort of thing. And it's kind of hard to keep track of this, but the number of unique registrations that came through was over 100,000 for the weekend.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's huge.
So, It's gigantic. So before that email came out, the number I had been hearing was like 85,000, which was still the biggest Phoenix Comic Con yet. Mm-hmm. But the number of unique registrations being over 100,000, that's quite something.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really indicative of how huge geek culture has become. You know, I mean, I mm-hmm. call it geek culture because I think that's just kind of the pop term for it. But yeah, I mean, you know, comic books, superheroes, all that stuff has become so big now. It's such a huge part of our cultural identity. And I think more than anything, it's become so socially acceptable that mm-hmm. folks who might have kind of been more hush-hush about it have really come out and been able to express that fandom a lot more. And there's a lot more feeding it now, too.
So, right.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But I will say in light of your absence, I had a lot of fun though recording those first two episodes of Tales of the Larians.
I enjoyed listening to them. So
obviously, I had the pleasure of interviewing two friends, but right. I wanted to use Joe as a guinea pig, but he of course hit it out of the park. And then my friend Greg was over one night before we played another rousing round of Star Wars the card game. I was like, why don't we run upstairs and record your tales? And when he started, I was like, oh man, this is gonna be short. And then, you know, it didn't take long to get into it. It was so much fun. I absolutely loved it. So I'm excited to do our next one as well, which I know if you've written in, don't worry, we've heard you. I've responded to I think all of you who've written in so far. But
If we haven't responded to you, email us again so that we can make sure we get you on the list, because we do have a list.
Yeah, and I'm excited to say I think there's already 8 or 9 people on it, which is I'm pumped for. So we'll get somebody on again either later this month or definitely early July. So we're definitely going to start doing this once a month. I'll say this, Jason, it's so much fun to do it. And I can see Scott Rifen has such a great time doing my Star Wars story. It's just
we should get Scott Rifen on to do one.
We should. We should. But
since he's never been on an episode of My Star Wars Story, at least being interviewed, we should interview him for Tales of the Larians.
Exactly. After we get some Larians in first, though, I want the folks who are regularly bending their ear to us to get their voice heard first.
Are we going to do our own episodes of this?
Oh, like, hell,
I'm going to ask you and you're going to ask me?
Yeah, because Joe, I don't know if you remember, Joe asked me one of the questions that I asked him. I'm like, no, that's not how this works. And he's like, but I'm curious. And I was like, no, don't worry. I'm going to make Jason interview me and I'm going to do him.
Yes.
So,
man, that'd be great.
My birthday's next month. Maybe we'll have two again next month. We'll do a listener and I'll let you do me on my birthday. It'll be my birthday present.
Oh, there we go. I like that idea.
Although most of my responses will probably be no surprise to those who've listened regularly, but that's okay.
Well, that's the same with me too, but it'll nice to get it all in one chunk.
Yes. Jason.
Yes.
Let's get right into this episode.
Okay.
But before we get into the episode, we have to talk about a poll that you insinuated right from the get-go at the start of the show, where we asked folks who their favorite bounty hunter was. And there was a good spread. So I never purposely tally because I like to wait and hear it from you. I like to hear it live and fresh myself. But, can you give us the numbers, good sir?
Yes, I can. And holy buckets. Was a huge response of people. If you mentioned more than one bounty hunter, I included both, you know, all of them, just so that we have a larger spread of mentions on here. And my gosh, we have a ton of bounty hunters on the list, including some that aren't actually in Star Wars. For example, tied for sixth place with one vote each is, to kick us off, is J-Bal Early, who I believe is a bounty hunter from Firefly. we have C-21 Highsinger, the droid from the Clone Wars, Dengar, Zuckuss, and Forlom, because they're a, you know, two-pack. we had the chicken from the Family Guy as a bounty hunter, which I'm not quite sure. I haven't seen Family Guy. Jodo Cast, Greedo, Asajj Ventress, Bosk, and HK-47, who is from the Old Republic games. In fifth place with two votes was IG-88. Fourth place with three votes, Jango Fett. In third place with five votes, including yours, Carl, was Embo.
Come on, he's only in third. Come on, people, get it together. Although I'm not surprised who's going to be number two and one.
Well, what may surprise you is what order, because in second place with seven votes was Boba Fett, and in first place with 12 votes was Cad Bane.
Overrated. But okay, the Larians have spoken. They all like Clint Eastwood as a bounty hunter.
Lee Van Cleef, technically. of course, everybody knows where my vote went.
Yeah, Jango Fett. Just kidding.
I'm going to kill you.
I think I want to highlight, though, I thought it was awesome somebody put Jodo Cast in there. I used to love Jodo Cast when I was like a young Star Wars fan. I can't remember where he came from. Do you remember?
I don't remember his origin, but I do know he's like a bounty hunter originally that like trained Jango Fett or not Jango Fett, Boba Fett, I think.
Right. Yeah. Jodo. I mean, he has the Mandalorian armor and everything. Mm-hmm. He was, akin to Boba Fett. And I can't remember if he was in a video game or a comic or what, but I remember loving him as a kid just because it was like cool to see another Boba Fett type character.
I think he was from a comic, and I do know he got an action figure made of him too, which, I mean, it's not that hard. You just take Boba Fett and redo the paint scheme.
Right.
So, because honestly, he looks like Boba Fett, except he's like green and yellow instead of, you know, green and orange.
Sure.
Or gray and yellow, I suppose. That was kind of cool. And I was just impressed that Embo got third place, you know.
He should be one, but that's okay. I'm very strong. In case folks don't know this, and I think most people do, but my cat's name is Embo because he's my favorite bounty hunter. Now, I was a Boba Fett fan my whole life until the prequels ruined him for me. And I'm sorry. I'm not saying like I hate the prequels. I'm just saying I hate that we had to get Boba Fett's origin story. We don't need it. He was a cooler character when we didn't know who he was. That being said, he's also been overused a lot recently, specifically the Marvel comic. So I'm just kind of over him. You know, like Boba Fett was this great mysterious character who we know way too much about. It just cheapened the character. So I kind of stopped. I mean, I still like Boba Fett looks awesome. I'll never disagree with that. And I still enjoy him as a character, but he's fallen down for me. Embo has taken the cake because I love Embo. He's awesome. He fights with a bowcaster, which is a great weapon. He's got that sick hat and he's like a martial artist as well.
Yeah.
Cad Bane is just brutal. And I know why people certainly love Cad Bane. But I've never been a fan. I never thought he was that great. And again, he was one of those characters. I think they made him too powerful. So I've never liked characters like that. Anakin shouldn't have a problem taking on a bounty hunter. Like in the Clone Wars series, when he gets bested by a bounty hunter, come on, he's the chosen one. Stop it. I don't know. That's just my opinion. But I never like
When did Cad Bane best Anakin? I don't recall.
Isn't it the arc with when Obi-Wan is undercover? I mean, he doesn't really best him, I guess. I mean, he just tricks him. I mean, he outsmarts Anakin, which I guess is okay. But the fact that he's
a very straightforward kind of person.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he can go toe-to-toe with Quinlan Voss and Obi-Wan, come on.
Oh, no, he wouldn't. He didn't go toe-to-toe. He just kept, you know, extending the fight by escaping. I mean, he knocked Quinlan Voss over, but Obi-Wan, you know, handled him pretty well until he escaped.
I'll give you that.
Cad Bane was, you know, a fighting retreat. Was doing a fighting retreat there.
That's so true. Yeah.
Anyway, details. Yeah, Cad Bane's my favorite, folks. I mean, anyone who will tip his hat to you right before he blows you up is kind of cool in my book. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's so great, too, you know, that two of the three top, you know, the two of the three top characters here are from Clone Wars specifically.
Yeah.
You know, again, those stories did so much to flush out the bounty hunters.
Right.
You know, because the on-screen bounty hunters in the films, you know, we get Boba Fett, who basically does nothing. We get Jango Fett, who does a tiny bit more than nothing. And that's really it. You know,
well,
and to be fair, on screen, Jango Fett's more of a badass than Boba Fett. So
it is true. The one thing I do like about, you know, this is sort of a side tangent, folks, and Carl and I haven't talked in weeks, so you're going to get a couple of these this episode. I can guarantee you that. The one thing that I do like about Boba Fett in regards to the prequels is he actually rose in my book from the prequels because knowing the fact that he's essentially genetically identical to all of these clone troopers, especially early on in his bounty hunting years, I'm sure, you know, weighed heavily on Boba, especially after his father died, because, you know, how does he differentiate himself from the rest of his brethren? You know, I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, emotional, mental conflict about, you know, are they actually his brothers, or does he see them as lower than he is? And how does he set himself apart, you know, in that respect, you know? And so that side of it was always kind of intriguing to me. And I think if we had gotten some stories dealing with that, I think that would have been cool. But, you know, we just sort of get Boba Fett being Boba Fett, you know, hunting down, you know, Luke Skywalker immediately after A New Hope at Ben's hovel and, you know, not really doing much, you know. And then he keeps showing up in the comics and right now, and it's like, if you're going to bring him in, make him do something rather than just show up, you know, fire some shots off at our heroes and then get, you know, tricked or, you know, have the heroes escape. Because kind of in Empire Strikes Back, Darth Vader does Boba Fett's job.
I mean, Boba Fett does track them.
People he tracks
say
them,
he did
but
nothing, but
Vader captures them for him.
He captures them, but he wouldn't have been able to do it without Boba Fett tracking them. And I think Boba could have potentially taken them down on his own. I mean, let's be honest. He had the jump on him. He probably could have.
In Empire, yes.
Yeah.
But these comics, he hasn't done any of that.
Right. Well, exactly. He doesn't belong in the comics. I'm sorry. He can have a standalone comic where he's doing his own stuff on the side, but I don't want to see him interacting with the big three.
If he's like, if we get a comic, like a one-off comic, where, you know, miniseries of him where he is tracking down and capturing some sort of rebel officer, you know, actually doing something important, and skilled, I think that would be great. But honestly, the way that they're using him right now is sort of like, hey, we need to make these comics cool. Let's put Boba Fett in there.
Right.
And I'm like, use him better, please. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yep.
Tangent, folks.
Well, I know you wanted to discuss a few other things, but we're going to wait till towards the end of the episode after our topic. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right?
Yes. Because we have a fun topic for you guys.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to go over some of our favorite quotes from the Star Wars movies. And Jason has like 1 to 5 minute clips. Mine are about 1 to 5 seconds.
I'm just kidding. They're not quite that long.
So the way I kind of lined up mine is just not... are kind of more like one-liners. That's kind of how I ranked my quotes. So they're more just one-liners. And you will probably pick up on a theme, but that's okay. I don't care. I know Jason and I will probably share if... I think we have at least one that's in common.
Mm. I have a good idea of which one that is.
Me too. What do you say
You have all the clips in front of you, so I'm sure you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly where they are in the movie, so I don't know exactly what yours are, but I think our favorite one is pretty damn similar.
Probably.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. So, but anyway, let's get into this. Of course, you know, we can never do a top five without two honorable mentions.
Right.
Our top five is always a top seven.
Right.
Jason, I'm gonna kick this off with your first one, your
okay.
first honorable mention. So yeah. Here we go.
I will say before you play it, mm-hmm. This is a little bit of a cheat. It's not exactly a quote. It's a segment of dialogue between two characters, but that's because I couldn't pick a favorite quote out of this scene. But I love this scene from Attack of the Clones. So go ahead and play it.
Okay, Jason.
Do you like your army?
I look forward to seeing them in action.
They'll do their job well. I'll guarantee that.
Thank you for your time, Jango.
Always a pleasure to meet a Jedi.
Yeah, this is a cheat. A total and unreserved cheat. I love this scene. Everybody knows that this is one of my favorite dialogue sequences in all of Attack of the Clones. And so I had to pick sort of the best part of that for this. And I couldn't determine which characters, you know, lines I liked. So I was just like, just do the whole ending of it, you know. the verbal sparring that happens between Obi-Wan and Jango is... one of the, outside of some stuff in Revenge of the Sith, some of the best dialogue in the prequels, in my opinion. That scene is great, and I've always enjoyed it. And just the fact that Obi-Wan and Jango, on the surface, are incredibly polite about everything. But the underlying, you know, stuff that you get with the tension in the room and the music going on and the looks between them, it's obviously they know the jig is up and they're just trying not to overplay their hand to the other. And so when you get that expressed in dialogue and a sequence of quotes, because this is a quotes episode, then I just love that. So that's why it's my honorable mention. And since it is a cheat, that's why I put it as an honorable mention and not in my actual top five. So
that's fair, because it is a cheat. No, it's fine. I'm not surprised. I figured you'd get something out of that scene in there. And I think, you know, that's something, you know, it's funny because both Greg and Joe discussed this kind of in their Tales of the Lariens moments when they were talking about their favorite lightsaber duel being the Return of the Jedi duel. And I think it's because there is kind of this, there is like, it's interspersed with verbal dueling, and that happens in the Empire duel as well. And even A New Hope has a lot of that too in the duel. You know, there's something to be said about that, kind of that verbal conflict. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the television shows that are really popular, they're not, you know, straight action scenes all the time. A lot of time it's these verbal conflicts. It's these people staring each other down, sizing each other up. and using their words to kind of spar with one another before things come, you know, to that physical element. And I think that this does such a great scene, and it makes that fight between Obi-Wan and Jango even better when we get to it a few minutes later, because
right.
You know, they've clearly sized each other up. They both think that they're capable of taking the other down, and
right.
Jango's wrong.
Jango escapes.
Yes, Jango escapes. But that is a great scene, and some great lines.
Awesome. Well, what's your first honorable mention, Carl?
Well, mine's not even worth playing a clip for because it's so short. But it's when Luke says, "Blasted Biggs, where are you?" I've always loved that line, and it's just this. You know, Luke is uttering it at this moment of stress. Like, you know, he just saved Biggs back. You know, Biggs had someone on his tail, and Luke takes care of it. And now someone's on Luke's tail that he can't shake, and Biggs isn't there. So, you know, blasted Biggs, where are you? It's kind of like this feeling of tension and stress. And I say it, I literally say this line quite a bit in real life. Like if I'm kind
yes,
of
you do.
Stressed out or anxious.
I can vouch. Yeah. I can vouch for this, folks, at conventions, when we're standing in line, you know, to, you know, get into the Rebels panel. Carl did utter this more than once.
Yeah. It's one of the, I don't quote a lot of Star Wars in my regular everyday vernacular, but this is definitely a line that I drop in my real world experience somewhat often. So, you know, just that blasted Biggs, where are you? You know, just kind of like that moment of tension, that moment of anticipation. And of course, Biggs is nowhere. You need Wedge.
Right, exactly.
Thanks, Wedge. Good shooting, Wedge. So good job, Biggs. But yeah, I've always enjoyed that line. It's just a fun line for me.
Nice. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, for just liking a line because it's fun and you use it frequently. So, all right. I suppose we should go to my second honorable mention here.
Yes, we should. And I forgot to mention that I don't have A New Hope either anymore on my computer. I thought I did. So you're gonna have to tell us what your next quote is. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean. This is from a scene early on in A New Hope. The character is C-3PO. The line is, "Don't call me a mindless philosophy, overweight glob of grease. Now get out of it before somebody sees you." You know, I love that line. You know, it encapsulates everything about R2 and 3PO in less than 10 seconds. You know, R2 whistles something snarky, C-3PO retorts with an insult, and that's R2 and 3PO. Everything about that's all you need to know that about their relationship is that, and that is them. That's R2 and 3PO, and it's great, and it's a funny line. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, a mindless philosopher, you know, R2 calls him a mindless philosopher, and all 3PO can muster is overweight glob of grease, you know. Who's thinking on a higher level here? not the protocol droid. it's just, you know, similar to your first honorable mention. It's just a fun line. I love it. There's no, you know, deep significant meaning behind why I love it. It's just, it's funny and I love it. And they're in the middle of this tense situation with the stormtroopers searching the ship, and we get droids calling each other names.
Yeah.
It's great.
I think, you know, obviously that the entire R2-3PO interaction there at the start of A New Hope is, it gives it that sense of lightness and levity in the midst of this huge battle. There's some great stuff there when they're getting ready in the escape pod. It's not on my list, but it's probably one of my favorite 3PO quotes. So he says, "What mission? What are you talking about?" You know,
I'm not getting in there.
Yeah.
I'm going to regret this. You know?
It does. It highlights that relationship so well of they are best friends who bicker. I mean, they're more of a married couple than anything else. They really care about each other, but they are constantly at, you know, bickering at one another. And in a way, R2's better at it.
Yes.
R2's more the bully type than 3PO, really. You know, and that's, you highlight that pretty well, you know.
Yeah.
R2's got this great little jab, and 3PO just, his response is kind of weak compared to it.
It's like, you, you know, jerk, you know, is essentially the response. But it's great. You know, I love it. What's your second honorable mention?
Well, mine comes from The Empire Strikes Back, so let me play this really quick.
It'd be crazy to follow us, wouldn't it?
Oh, nuts. I missed it. Hold on.
You missed that.
I don't know. Whatever. I'm not even going to try to find it. I wrote this one down wrong, I think. But it's my only Han Solo quote, but it's never tell me the odds. To me, it's just that line kind of encapsulates Han Solo. Han doesn't really believe in the impossible. Quite literally, you know, think of his reaction to the Force and, you know, A New Hope, especially, you know, he doesn't believe in kind of like things that are impossible. Han makes his own luck. Han doesn't see himself being in a situation that he can't get himself out of. And I think that's, you know, that's his response. 3PO is very rational here. You know, the possibility of surviving, an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1, you know,
never tell me the odds.
Yeah. You know, this is something that is impossible for the normal person. But you know, Han isn't going, it's so funny because for somebody who claims to be so rational, you know, in A New Hope, you know, doesn't believe in things outside of what you can, you know, rationally understand. Han is saying that he won't be limited. And it's also a sense of his own confidence.
He's the exception to the statistic.
Exactly. Yeah, so he's the one.
He's the one.
Exactly. You know, and I remember there's this great interview with Dave Filoni from a few years ago where he talks about how he's talking about like Force use, and he's saying that in a way everybody in the Star Wars universe has a way of using the Force, and he equates it to Han Solo, and he says, you know, basically whenever Han is in the midst of, you know, flying in an epic space battle or space pursuit, he in a way is channeling the Force because he's most himself. You know, he's tapping into something beyond himself, and I always liked that. I think that's really cool that there is the kind of this reality that Han does use the Force, just not like a Jedi. He's not. It's something unique from that. And I think this line of, you know, never tell me the odds is Han kind of saying that he sees himself being the exception, that he is capable of rising above things that seem hopeless.
Right.
So I really enjoy that line of his.
Yeah, no, there were a couple of Han lines that I debated about putting on my list, but I didn't end up because I like some of these other ones better. But yeah, that was one of them. And then, of course, you know, boring conversation anyway. That whole scene is always a favorite when it comes to Han Solo. He's definitely got some good quotes and one-liners and all that fun stuff. So I'm glad you included. I figure you would include at least one Han Solo quote.
Yeah, you had to. I mean, this is kind of a stereotypical one, but it's great. It's such a good line, and it's such a Han Solo line.
Right. Well, speaking of lines that are similar to Han Solo lines, let's get into my number 5.
Okay. Which I don't have.
You don't have?
No, it's because... Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It is Force Awakens. Okay, hold on one second. I do have that. Give me one moment. I read that wrong. I thought it said Phantom Menace. All right.
Give me
one moment and I will pull up Jason's next one. Oh, Jason, we got to get you a mixer.
I know.
All right. Hold on one sec. And damn it. crap. It's such a pain using iTunes. I don't like its interface. It sucks. Okay, here we go. All right, Jason, I got this.
Okay.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
That's it. I love Poe Dameron, and that scene in particular with Poe. You know, who talks first? You talk first. I talk first. And then the whole, you know, thing afterwards with, you know, it's kind of hard to understand you through that apparatus. It's just great. You know, he's wisecracking after being captured by one of the scariest guys in the First Order. It's a great character moment for Poe, just to sort of get an idea as to who he is. But it's just a funny line, you know. And we've talked about it before. Force Awakens is almost more outright funny than any other Star Wars movie that we have, even with, you know, the slapstick comedy of Jar Jar Binks, you know, the sort of, you know, old, you know, classic Laurel and Hardy and, oh, gosh, Charlie Chaplin style, you know, slapstick that you get with Jar Jar. This one, Force Awakens, is more witty funny than any other Star Wars movie almost. And we get that early on with, especially with this line. I just love it. You know, you've been told immediately through the music and the cinematography, Kylo Ren is a bad dude. He's bad. He's scary. You don't want to mess with him.
And the first
thing that happens when a good guy, you know, he kills Lor San Tekka. And the first thing that happens when one of our heroes interacts with him is he cracks a joke. So, similar to what Han would do, telling off Jabba the Hutt, you know, over the Sarlacc pit. But I just like the line. It's great. It's funny. And that's it. So,
Poe is quotable. Poe is definitely a quotable character. And I think, you know, that line so early in the movie, it's one of the most blatantly funny lines in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You know, 3PO and R2 have some great moments in the original movie. And then, if, you know, they also have some in the other, you know, in Empire and Jedi. But the majority of Star Wars it's not meant to be that funny. Like there's little things that'll make you chuckle here and there. And obviously Jar Jar is meant to be kind of comical character, but Poe is a different type of, he's sarcastic humor, you know, it's kind of, it's kind of like that sassy sarcastic humor. And like you said, it immediately sets up the type of character he is and the type of guy he is he's just not intimidated, you know, even though he's just been captured, you know, his response is simply one of like lightness and humor. And he doesn't seem to be all that, you know, scared of who he's been captured by. I think right from the get-go, specifically that scene, that's when folks immediately fell in love with Poe Dameron.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because he's kind of like, okay, he's cool. You know, we see him, you know, getting these plans and, you know, he guns down some stormtroopers. So it's like, oh, cool, he's got a great shot. But then it's just the way he deals with the villain is just like, oh my, okay, I like this guy. I like this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure it was scenes like that that convinced J.J. Abrams and the crew to not kill off Poe Dameron and to make him, you know, one of our primary heroes of the next saga or the next trilogy, I should say. Because originally in the script, Poe was not supposed to survive.
Right. That crash killed him.
Yep.
But it's so great. That scene when he returns, you know, would have been a lot less powerful if Han said it's the resistance and then it was just like random pilots.
Yeah. You know,
having Poe in that scene made that scene better too, because it's somebody to immediately you feel for that character too. So you're like, oh cool. Like he's back.
He's back. He survived and he's awesome.
Yeah exactly.
So That's one hell of a pilot.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a good one.
What's your number five?
All right. Here's my number five.
Okay.
Yes. A Jedi's strength flows from the Force.
That's it. But I love that line. A Jedi's strength flows from the Force. You know, you gotta get a Yoda quote in here. I mean, it's quotable Star Wars. I absolutely, love this line because it's really, in a way, it's Yoda's first teaching to Luke in the training on screen. You know, yeah, he's testing him when they first encounter each other and, you know, he has some words of wisdom for Luke. But this is his first direct teaching to Luke that we hear on screen, which is a Jedi's strength flows from the Force. What Yoda's saying is that it's a Jedi's relationship with the Force that gives them their power. So it's, you know, that's very different from a Sith, you know, or a dark side user who draws on the Force and uses it like a battery in a way. You know, they drain its power for their own use. But what Yoda is indicating here, and this is, you know, I think this is a very humbled Yoda, you know, in light of the prequels, who is reminding the new Jedi, the new way of being Jedi, which is the old way of being a Jedi that was just forgotten because of the Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. But he's reminding him that the staple and the foundation of a Jedi is their relationship to the Force. And the stronger their connection to the Force, the stronger they are as a Jedi. And I just think that's so great. It's the kind of the foundational teaching of what it means to be a Jedi is that, you know, your effectiveness as a Jedi depends upon the way in which you are open and responsive and in relationship to the Force. And of course, as somebody who's very into spirituality, you know, it's very indicative of, you know, a person of faith is strongest in their faith when they're grounded in God, when they are, you know, when they're in a good relationship with their God, whoever that God may be. But it's the same thing here with a Jedi. You know, they're not going to be very effective if they are not finding their strength from the Force. So I absolutely love that.
That's a great line, you know, and packed with meaning, and you know, especially in relation to everything that we have seen thus far in the saga. You know, the fact that Yoda has, you know, not only the fact that Yoda's teaching that to Luke and the importance of that to Luke in that moment, but also to see that Yoda has come back around to that core. You know, after the prequels and everything, where he's essentially kind of running the Jedi Order as like a political entity in conjunction with the Senate, the fact that he's able to get back around to that core, you know, a Jedi's strength flows from the Force. And that's the key. That's the core of it. You know, that whole idea is really... really neat to see. So it's great that you brought up a Yoda quote, because he's my number four.
Yes. And you know what I just realized, Jason, why I had a problem with my first Empire Strikes Back clip? Is I have the version I have on my computer is the 1980 version, and we were going off of the special editions earlier. How do you feel like quoting your next quote?
All right, I can do that.
Because it's Yoda. Come on, you can do this.
Yeah, as well. Yeah. It essentially starts off with, "Are you wondering why are you here?" And then Luke answers, "Well, I'm looking for someone." "Looking? Found someone you have?" I would say. I just love that. You know, even though Yoda creeped me out as a kid, that scene is always very memorable to me, with, you know, Yoda, you know, laughing like a little gargoyle the entire time. And the fact that the first thing he does is make like a sort of a dad joke with Luke, you know, "I'm looking for someone." "Well, you found somebody, didn't you?" You know, it's I just think it's funny. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, at this point, Yoda can be funny is sort of a novel idea, because he's so serious for so much of the prequels, that when Yoda's out there in the swamps of Dagobah and you get to that point in his life, you know, you're either like, okay, so he's either really messing with Luke or years of exile has gone to his head. and he's gone a little nuts. And it's not until later that you realize what exactly is going on, but it's just, I love the quote. It's funny. And I love Yoda's laugh. And so I had to include a quote that included Yoda's laugh. So, yeah, that's one of my favorites. And, of course, I should probably preface this by saying that, except for maybe a handful of these quotes, this list could change tomorrow. just because of the nature of things, you know, what I'm going through, what I watched most recently, that sort of thing. Maybe the first, you know, two probably wouldn't change very much, but the rest of this list could change quite a bit if you asked me this question tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat, Jason. I think, except for probably my top three, the rest of these could be pretty interchangeable, if not, you know, finding others while I'm watching them and be like, oh, crap, I wish I'd put that in, or oh, crap, I wish I'd put that in.
Exactly.
But yeah, that is a great, you know, that first entrance of Yoda, although, you know, obviously the original audience didn't know it was Yoda. And I will say, I'll just take it one step a little deeper of the fact that, you know, even though Yoda is kind of joking and making a dad joke, he is instating the obvious, like, you have found someone. But I think that is indicative of even a teaching, like, Luke is looking for something great and, you know, powerful. And he's basically looking for Arnold Schwarzenegger in the swamp, you right, know, like this right. great warrior. And Yoda's pointing out, like, you know, you have found someone. Don't let your eyes, you know, your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them.
Exactly.
Hey, I slipped in a quote. But
it's like Obi-Wan and Yoda were in cahoots or something.
Yeah, exactly. So Yoda is like, he is kind of trying to enlighten Luke, you know, keep your eyes open because you never know what you're looking for because exactly. you have found something. But in Luke's mind, he's found something useless, just like when Obi-Wan, you know, encounters Jar Jar or again, little Anakin, you know,
right.
They're easily written off. How Qui-Gon like of Yoda?
Qui-Gon has such an impact on the saga, even though he's only in one movie.
Yes.
And that's wonderful, because he's an awesome character.
He's an amazing character.
Yes. Yes, he is. All right, what's your number four, Carl?
My number four comes from Attack of the Clones, and it's a very, very, very short one.
Okay.
Jedi business, go back to your drinks.
Anakin's just he's just calling the shots at the club.
Jedi business, go back to your drinks.
I loved that line when I first heard it when I was younger, like, Jedi business, go back to your drinks. You know, it's so dismissive, it's so calm and cool. Like, Anakin's in control of this room right now. He's kind of calling the shots. And
it's Anakin's move along moment.
Exactly. Yeah, it's basically Anakin saying, mind your business.
You know? Exactly.
And yeah, I don't have any big deep realizations to what I like about this quote again, but I think it's just a cool, fun quote. And it's cool to watch, like, how a Jedi reacts in a scene like that. You know, it's a popular nightclub, it's somewhat shady because there's people in there trying to sell death sticks, you know.
Right.
When, you know, Anakin says Jedi business, people kind of also know. I think it's an important quote that shows the populace's reaction to the Jedi. You know, when Jedi are doing something, you know, everybody kind of reacts when Obi-Wan cuts off Zam Wessel's arm. But Anakin's just saying, this doesn't concern you. Let us do our thing, right? Like,
and they all go, oh,
yeah. Okay. And they just kind of go
and
back
just
to their
return
thing.
Back to their business.
Exactly. They pay it no mind because they've been told not to.
Exactly.
And that's, again, this is, I don't say it much anymore, but when that movie came out, I said it all the time, even though, I mean, I wasn't drinking or anything. I was like 13 years old, but but I used to love to say
at
that.
At the
like,
soda bar.
Yeah, yes, exactly. At the soda bar. Jedi business, go back to your drinks. I don't know. It's just such a, it's just a cool line.
Yeah.
So that's, even though it's a short one, it's such a good one, and it's high on my list. I've always loved it.
There's some funny quotes in Attack of the Clones. There was another one that I was thinking about including on my list, but it was more of Obi-Wan's reaction to something Anakin said. And I'm going to go on a tangent here, folks. you know, Geonosis Arena, Anakin and Padme are being brought in there, and Obi-Wan says, you know, beginning to wonder if you got my message. And Anakin explains, well, we did. Then we decided to come rescue you. And Obi-Wan just looks up at his shackled hands and then back to Anakin and says, good job. I almost put that on my list, but, you know, it's more of a reaction than an actual quote, so I didn't. And I put Jango and Obi-Wan instead.
You know, I really wanted to put on my list the sand quote. I don't like sand.
I wondered if you were going to do that.
Irritating. And it gets everywhere.
It does.
I love that line. And it's perfectly acted, so I don't know why that's like the go-to line to crap on. Like, there's so many other lines you could easily be like, okay, that was poorly stated, or like, what about the other Jedi spread around the galaxy? Like, that's a poorly delivered line.
But, I mean, come on. It's a kid who grew up in a sandy desert planet. He had the chance to get off of it. He doesn't want to go back to sand.
Yeah.
He's had enough of sand.
It gets everywhere.
It gets everywhere.
So good. I mean, the way he says that line.
Chafing and everything is horrible.
Yeah, exactly.
In all the wrong places. and we'll just leave it at that.
Let's roll into your number three, Jason.
Okay. My number three is from The Phantom Menace. And you said you didn't have this one, right?
I don't. Sorry.
Okay. Well, that's okay because it's Jar Jar Binks and I can do Jar Jar Binks.
Yes, you can.
This is from about, you know, almost a half an hour into the movie. And Jar Jar is wandering the halls of the Queen's Royal Starship and he bumps into Padme and R2. And Padme says, you know, how'd you end up here with us?
My no no. Misa taster and pitiyoki day with the brisky morning munchin. Then boom, getting very scared and grabbing that Jedi. And pow, Misa here. Misa getting very, very scared.
I mean, yeah, it's goofy. It's Jar Jar. It's funny. I like it. I think it's funny. And this is just a normal guy who got caught up in business far beyond what he should have been able to get involved with. And he has no idea exactly what's happened. I mean, if you had gotten caught up in this situation, you'd probably be reacting pretty much the same way. You know, it's just like, I was just minding my business. I ran into this Jedi and all of a sudden I'm here. I don't understand. You know, I mean, it's funny and it's honest. You know, it's honest and it's real. it's like, if you're, you know, not trained for this sort of, you know, stuff, you really think you'd react any other way? I don't think so. I'd probably be doing the same thing. So, yeah, it's my number three. You know I got to give Jar Jar some love, folks.
I mean, if I'm going to do Han and you're not doing Jar Jar, something's wrong.
That is true.
yeah, I do enjoy that. I enjoy that part with Jar Jar because it is. It's just like a... Jar Jar's the outside character pulled into this huge galactic event and pulled into that saga in a way kind of like R2 and 3PO and A New Hope were kind of our eyes and window into that galaxy. Jar Jar is meant to be that for Phantom Menace.
Right.
And, you know, all these things happen and he's just doing his own thing and then boom, he's getting very scared. And, you know, his whole life changes. You know,
right.
it's that huge transitional moment in his life. And it's the beginning of a redeemed life in a way. And what I mean by that is because of his interaction then with Qui-Gon and the Jedi, Jar Jar is able to return to society. You know, he's able to return to Gungan life. He's going to eventually even become a general in the army. And he becomes, you know, involved in the Senate later on. Jar Jar has his life put back together because of this. But his response to it, again, is because Jar Jar is like that innocent character. He just doesn't get it. He's just like, I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden, you know, all this craziness has been happening and I'm right in the middle of it.
I'm just eating breakfast. I run into this Jedi and I'm here. You know, I don't know what happened. It's great. That's why it's my number three. So yeah. What's your number three, Carl?
Well, my number three comes from The Force Awakens. So, and it comes from our great friend, Maz Kanata. So here we go.
Close your eyes. Feel it. The light. It's always been there. It will guide you.
I love that. I should have let the music keep playing, but I don't need the lines, the saber, take it. But this line, I'm not kidding. The first time I saw that movie, it brought tears to my eyes. Even though I'd already cried a couple other times in the movie, I think, yeah, I cried right during the opening crawl because a new Star Wars movie, my God.
Right.
I remember getting teary-eyed when Poe gives Finn his name. And because it's like this really endearing moment. And again, I think I teared up when we saw when Han is standing in the Falcon cockpit and just smiles. And when he first showed up, man, I cried a lot that first movie. Good Lord. but this one too, really, it got to me and in a way that will stay with me. That's the difference. You know, like a lot of those other things were like first time seeing it, it's kind of that response. But this line, again, it's something that's kind of more spiritually minded. It's Maz Kanata giving Rey instructions about the Force, and she's inviting her to feel it. It's kind of similar to, you know, that line with Yoda saying, you know, a Jedi's strength flows from the Force. You know, it's something that's implying, you have to feel it. You have to have a relationship with it in a way. And, you know, and she's in that line, you know, the light, it's always been there. I love that. You know, it's that, you know, this isn't something that's stumbled into you, or it's not stumbled upon you, Rey. Like, this has always been there. The fact that you were always a great pilot, the fact that you were, you know, you have such an aptitude for so many like incredible things, you know, that comes from something that's always been within you. And Maz is telling her, like, it's there, let it guide you. You know, it's kind of this reminder that the Force is always working. The Force is, you know, it's always like reaching out to people. And she's telling Rey that by listening to it, it will guide you. It will tell you where to go. And of course, we see Rey finally do that at the end of the movie when, you know, mm-hmm. Kylo Ren says, you know, I can teach you the ways of the Force. And Rey says, the Force closes her eyes finally and lets the light guide her. And I think the reason it struck me so much that first time I saw it was, because I was just feeling so confused about like, okay, what am I doing in my life right now? Like, I'm not really doing what I thought I was going to be doing. And, you know, there was kind of like this separated feeling from the light that has always guided me. And it just reminded me of like, yeah, dude, just calm down. Cause it's still there. Just tap mm-hmm. into that again and it will guide you. And that really just sat with me. Cause it's again, in kind of like that spiritual context, it's this reminder that we can always return to the spirit that's within us, and that light is always present and it's always guiding us. But a lot of times we forget to close our eyes and feel it. So I love that part because, Maz is giving her such an in-depth understanding of what the Force is. Again, it's this reminder that it's not the Force isn't some gift to Rey that, oh, here, now you have it, use it. It's like, nope, it's always been there. And the same is true with obviously Anakin and Luke and any of the Force users we've met. You know, it's something that was always in there, but it took someone to help them recognize it. And then obviously, which we'll probably get in episode 8, is living, you know, it really unpacking what that's going to look like.
So. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, no, that's great. And gosh, I completely spaced on any of Maz's quotes. I'm so glad that you included this, because she's definitely got some great lines. You know, I see your eyes, I know your eyes, and then of course the ever popular Han Solo. Where's my boyfriend?
Chewie's working on the Falcon.
That Wookiee.
I like that Wookiee.
Oh, I mean, come on. She's great. She's one of the best characters out of The Force Awakens, in my opinion. I love Maz. But I'm so glad that you included this quote, because, yeah, it's a good one and it's an important one, and I won't spend too much time on it because you expounded on it quite a bit. But she really is, you know, the call to adventure for Rey, as we talked about before, where it's interesting. I don't know if we made this specific distinction when we did our episode about the, you know, the calls, the different calls to adventure for our characters, but Force Awakens is different from the rest of the two opening movies of the trilogies in that the mentor in The Force Awakens is not the one who gives the call to adventure. Where right. with The Phantom Menace, you know, Qui-Gon is the mentor and gives the call to adventure to Anakin. Obi-Wan is, you know, the mentor and gives the call to adventure for Luke. Han's the mentor in The Force Awakens, but Maz is the one who gives the call to adventure. And this is her really opening that up to Rey in that scene after her vision. And it's a great line and it's a great moment too. So I'm glad you included it.
How could I not?
Indeed. All right, now we're down to our top two here.
Yeah, I've got yours all queued up.
Okay, good. And now this is a clip that I could have let go for like 2 minutes. But I had to condense it here. So just go ahead and play it, and you'll understand where I'm coming from.
Okay.
You ever hear the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
No.
I thought not. It's not a story the Jedi would tell you. It's a Sith legend.
There we go. And like I said, I could have let the whole rest of that scene play out because I love, you know, that scene in general is one of my favorite scenes from Revenge of the Sith. But that section in particular where we get Palpatine, you know, really baiting the hook with Anakin and starting to reel him in by telling him the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise. And, you know, the dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities, some considered to be unnatural. And then, of course, he, you know, sets the hook there at the very end of the scene when Anakin asks, is it possible to learn this power? And Palpatine just looks at him and says, not from a Jedi. So I had to include at least the opening part of that whole sequence there as my, you know, my number two favorite quote.
You know, so, Jason, for somebody who's like does acting, like has done acting school and acting classes, I'm kind of surprised you don't know the difference between a monologue and a quote. Well, I'm just kidding.
I told you, I probably had another cheat in here, and this is it.
I'm messing with you. I don't care.
I know. It's a monologue. It's a whole dialogue scene, mainly a monologue with Annika interjecting once or twice. Mm-hmm. But it's just so good. It's just so good. The whole scene. Ian McDiarmid is brilliant in this scene.
He really steals the show in that film.
He does. He does. And why he wasn't at least nominated for Best Supporting Actor that year, I will never know. It's because nobody wants to give acting awards to Star Wars.
Right.
Because it's science fiction, and George Lucas doesn't want to do stuff in the studio system. I'm not bitter at all, am I? but yeah, no, it's just, it's such an important scene in the story of Anakin's fall. And it's just so brilliantly done. And Ian McDiarmid just draws you in with this story so much that I had to include at least a segment of that scene here as my second favorite quote in all of Star Wars.
You know, it's such a powerful part of the film because it really is. It's the moment that Palpatine finally hooks Anakin. Mm-hmm. It's this tale. It's the tragedy of Darth Plagueis that becomes the tragedy of Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
You know, and that is he is going to, you know, he tells even where you kind of cut off your quote here, you know, like, I thought not. It's not a story the Jedi would tell you. You know, he's again insinuating, which he's been doing a lot throughout the film, that there are things about the Force that they're not telling me, you know, as Anakin mm-hmm. so eloquently puts it. But Palpatine is. He's constantly hinting at, like, they're keeping stuff from you, my boy. Like, you deserve to know more. And here he is saying, well, here's a story of somebody that could actually save people from death. And he knows that's exactly what Anakin needs to hear.
Right.
So, you know, he's feeding off of Anakin's suspicions, and he's confirming them by saying, well, there are actually other things out there about the Force, but they're too afraid to tell you about them. And he knows that Anakin's going to buy in 100% to that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And boy, does he hook Anakin good, you know, and Anakin can't get away after this. So it's tragic, but it's so well done.
Yeah.
That I love it, you know. Everybody knows that Palpatine is my favorite villain in Star Wars, and this is one of his best moments in the saga. So this is one that probably will not move. If you ask me, you know, my favorite quotes, this is one that will definitely always be up near the top. There's one more it's kind of, you know, the best ever, but we'll both get to that here momentarily, I'm sure.
Yeah. But before we do, I will give my number two, which also comes from Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, shoot. Got to turn the sound on there. Carl, there we go.
There we are.
You were the chosen one! It was said that you would destroy the Sith, not join them! Bring balance to the Force, not leave it in darkness!
Okay, the only line that I wanted was you were the chosen one, but I did a Jason there and cheated.
I mean, that's all one quote.
It is. That's true. I absolutely loved it. And this, like you just said, Jason, this is something that will never change. This will always be my number two. Unless we get something better in 8 or 9. Right. But this is one of those ones that's not interchangeable. And it's, again, it has a lot to do with the acting. You know, Ewan McGregor absolutely, you know, kills this scene. And I think Anakin does too, even though all he has to do is say, I hate you. But the combination of Ewan's delivery with the music as well, again, John Williams always breathing life into these films.
Oh, I mean, if it was any other music, this wouldn't have nearly as powerful. It's just John Williams is so integral to Star Wars that anything that is on screen automatically gets jumped up like 5 notches when John Williams' music is added to it.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. You know, it's this great line of, you know, you were the chosen one. It's Obi-Wan's, all of his hope is lost. He has lost everything at this point. The Jedi Order has been destroyed. His best friend has fallen. You know, he has nothing. And he did. He had all this hope built up, just like the whole Jedi Order did in a way. You know, Obi-Wan, you know, both Greg and Joe talked about this in the Tales of the Larians, that Obi-Wan, and I think a lot of Star Wars fans would agree, Obi-Wan is kind of the quintessential Jedi. He is kind of the perfect Jedi figure for us in a way. And I think in a way, Obi-Wan is kind of symbolic of the Jedi as a whole. And he's not just speaking for himself when he says, you were the chosen one. He's speaking for the Jedi Order. In a way, he's speaking for the galaxy at large. Like, I cannot believe this has happened. Mm-hmm. You fell. You know, it was said you'd destroy the Sith, not join them. Bring balance to the Force, not leave in darkness. You know, and just the way he says it, that the strain in his voice, the rawness of it, it is this feeling of extreme disappointment.
Yeah. And then if you would let that quote continue, you know, the next part gets it personal.
Right.
You were my brother, Anakin. I loved you. You know, it takes it from this broad, you know, this was your destiny. You know, yeah. What did you do to, and this is how it affects me. You know, it's so powerful and so sad and so well done.
Mm-hmm.
So
I can't speak enough about that quote. Because it's just so freaking good. And I remember when the trailer came out, I was a freshman in college when one of the trailers came out for Revenge of the Sith, because it came out my freshman year in college. And just, you know, they had that line in there, you know, you were the chosen one. I would go back and rewatch that trailer 100 times and just listen to that quote itself. And I loved it. And every time I watch that movie still now, like, that just, it's such a gut wrenching line.
Yeah.
You know, and you feel it. It makes you feel it that, you know, they've lost everything, because they thought Anakin was the chosen one. And, you know, sorry, I just inevitably do this. So, you know, if you hate the spirituality stuff that I bring up, I apologize. But it really makes me think, actually, of like probably what a lot of the disciples thought when Jesus was crucified. If they're standing there under the cross, you know, you were the chosen one. You know, they expected him to do something a lot different than what he was doing. It's just that feeling of utter defeat. And that's exactly what Obi-Wan is feeling. And in a way, Obi-Wan's right. You know, Anakin will do what, you know, he will bring balance to the Force in 20 odd more years. But, you know, it's not the way they thought it was going to be. And, you know, it's just that reality of building up those expectations and then just watching them dashed, you know, and it just breaks your heart. I love that line.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do too. And I don't have anything else to add to it that we haven't already discussed on this show or other shows. So I think we should just move along to our final quote, which is not move along, by the way, folks. And completely unplanned, folks, it looks like Carl and I have the exact same number one. So without any further ado, Carl, just play it.
I'll play it.
Never. I'll never turn to the dark side. You failed, Your Highness. I am a Jedi, like my father before me. So be it, Jedi.
And I think that wraps up this episode of the Wampus Lair.
Pretty much.
Oh, man. This is probably the most talked about segment, the section of Star Wars that we have discussed on this show. I swear, the amount of ways that this moment, this scene is talked about on our show, the amount of ways that we've been able to include it in conversation is kind of getting ridiculous, but it's just that good. Yes. It's just that good. You know, of course, we've talked about the fact that it's the assertion of Luke's identity, the calling out of Anakin's identity, and the fact that even at the end of the day, the villain of all of this has to recognize that that's the case. You know, so be it, Jedi. You know, he can't deny that Luke is a Jedi and that his plans to turn Luke have failed. So it's there is at this point in time nothing better in Star Wars in terms of quotes for me. And we've talked this quote, this scene to death ad nauseum on multiple episodes, and of course it was, you know, both Carl's and my number one Luke moment in our top five Luke moments episode, you know, not too long ago. So it should come as no surprise that this is where it is on our lists. Carl, you want to say anything else?
You know, I mean, I agree. We've talked about this to death, so I don't want to say too much, but I'm always going to say something because I have an opportunity.
Might as well.
But yeah, you know, for me, it's obviously specifically that I am a Jedi, like my father before me. You know, and I think it is. I was talking to my friend when we did our top five Luke's moment. You know, Greg was over a few days after we put it out, and he was telling me, he's like, yeah, he's like, I was listening to that on the T, and he's like, even listening to it on the subway, you know, just it, when you played the quote, he's like, I always get chills. And it is. It's such a chill inducing moment because Luke has won. At this point, he has won. Whether he dies or not is inconsequential at this point because Luke has won. He has returned the Jedi. You know, and it's the first time that the Emperor has failed, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, and you failed, Your Highness. He even uses his dignitary term, but, you know, Luke has triumphed in this moment, and the reason he triumphs is because he's true to himself. And that's the triumph of the Star Wars galaxy is being who you're called to be. And that's exactly what Luke did. He followed his destiny, to use Star Wars language, and he was victorious as a result. He defeats evil by being himself.
Right.
So
and following the will of the Force.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I don't have much more to say beyond that because, like you said, we have talked about this thing quite a bit. So
ad nauseum, you could say.
Yeah, yeah. I'll kind of leave it at that.
Right. And because I'm sure it'll come up in discussion again in the future. Just expect it, folks.
Yeah, yeah. It's bound to not be the last time you hear that from us. We'll figure out a way to fit it in there again.
Right. Exactly. Oh, man. This has been fun.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm glad that we get to talk on an episode face-to-face again or, you know, Skype-to-Skype.
Exactly. It's been far too long.
Indeed. Since it has been a while, before we wrap up this episode, I just wanted to talk about something I'd been thinking about the last couple of days. And just a realization that I've come to I'm catching up on a bunch of podcasts right now. Most notably right now, Star Wars Report. And I've been, you know, catching up on a lot of their continued discussion post Force Awakens, and then, you know, even discussion after the Blu-rays and everything came out. So I've been listening to a lot of that this week. And it just made me realize something that not necessarily right after Force Awakens came out, but maybe like starting around a month or so after it came out, and even after, you know, watching it on Blu-ray the first time or two, I wasn't treating it quite as fairly as I probably should have. I was starting to really nitpick at some of the things, and, you know, which I get irritated with other people who do that with the prequels. So I'm like, maybe I'm being hypocritical when I started realizing that I was doing that. And it's one of those things where I realized the reason why I was getting a little nitpicky, a little critical of some of the stuff from The Force Awakens, because obviously I love the movie. Mm-hmm. And it will depend on the rest of the trilogy as to you know, where exactly it ends up ranking in my, you know, in the grand scheme of things eventually. But I realized why, and that's, I'm missing George Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
George Lucas has been, you know, for better or worse, depending on your opinion, the man behind Star Wars for so long. You know, since its creation until about, you know, 2012, when the sale to Disney was made. And I'm sure he had some influence, you know, shortly after the sale. But then he's essentially retired, and he's fine with retirement, from all accounts. And The Force Awakens is sort of the first real demonstration as to what Star Wars is going to be like without George. And I've come to the realization that I like it. It still fits within the Star Wars mythos. But I'm just going to have to get used to the fact that George is not going to be there anymore. And you know, as someone who, like me, I'm a huge fan of George Lucas and, you know, what he's done in terms of storytelling, in addition to pushing the movie making process forward with each and every film that he released in the Star Wars saga. It's just something that I'm going to have to learn to accept and find a way to come to grips with that fact. And it's not, you know, the fault of J.J. Abrams or Kathleen Kennedy or anything. It's just my own, you know, resistance to saying goodbye to George Lucas. You know, obviously he's still around and we'll still hear from him from time to time. And it's not like he's, you know, passed away or anything, but he's for all intents and purposes done being directly involved with Star Wars. And it's just sort of something I'm dealing with, you know, it's just, you know, I haven't figured it all out yet. It's something I'm, you know, this week I've been really realizing and having to, you know, think about and come to grips with, but it's just one of those things I'm missing George. And, that's just something that, you know, I didn't think that would be happening this soon.
Yeah, you know, I think there's, I completely agree with you, Jason, that, you know, after watching The Force Awakens a lot since it's come out on Blu-ray, you know, I too, ever since it's not been in theaters, it's just since Blu-ray came out, because when it was in theaters, if you can probably remember from a lot of our post, you know, release episodes, I was obsessed with that movie. I had it ranked just below Empire. It no longer stands there for me, and it's not because I don't like it anymore, but, you know, after, and we used to say this a lot back then too, you know, like, well, once we have it, you know, we can own it and we can kind of watch it whenever we want, you know, when we can start digesting it even more, it's going to change, you know, it's going to change our experience. It's going to change the way we saw it. You know, a lot of those moments that just like blew my mind in theaters, they're not blowing my mind anymore because I've, you know, I've seen it 100 times, you know,
Right.
BB-8 doing his like lighter thumbs up. Like it's a great scene, but I don't laugh anymore because I know it's coming. You know, it's mm-hmm. not to diminish it. It's still like a clever moment, but it's not funny like that first time you saw it.
Right. It's not like, you know, gut laughing out loud. Yeah, funny.
Exactly.
You didn't expect it in the theater the first time. And then all of a sudden he's just, you know, thumbs up, and it's hysterical.
Right.
But now you know what's coming. And you're like, and there it is. Yeah. You know, yeah, sort of thing.
That. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, now that we've had time to really digest the film, you know, when I was talking to Joe about this a lot, and you know, Joe made a great point. You know, this is the first official fan film, you know,
yeah,
because it's not George Lucas made, and it's funny because, you know, I was reading, I kind of hit pause on the J.W. Rinzler series, but I did read the entire first one. I got through half of Empire, and I've kind of hit pause and started reading some other things, but you know, it's very clear from early on when George first started putting this franchise together, he kind of did envision Star Wars kind of growing beyond himself earlier on. Like, it was going to be a saga that he created, but then, you know, he wanted other people to have their hands in it, other directors. And we got that right away with Empire, but he ended up, you know, obviously still being very involved with Empire, and then even more so involved with Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, you know, Richard Marquand didn't really have the experience with, you know, high special effects movies, and exactly. So George had to be a lot more hands-on than he ended originally anticipated.
Right, you know, and then obviously he completely takes control of the prequels, and which is good and bad. You know, it's mm-hmm. good because it's definitely a George Lucas Star Wars film. The only bad side to it is he was a lot more collaborative in the original movies, and I think it was lacking that, obviously, because you got really bad script writing. You had a director who couldn't really direct actors. So, you know, that's where a lot of the pitfalls of the prequels are. And it's sad that you had a producer, Rick McCallum, who clearly didn't know how to say no or critique George, you know, whereas, oh my gosh, who was it? Who was the producer for the original two?
Oh,
Gary Kurtz.
Yes,
that's Gary Kurtz was not afraid to say to George, "That's not going to work," or "That's stupid. You need to do this," you know. Or you had, you know, somebody like Lawrence Kasdan, who says, "Like, no, we're going to write it like this." You know, Star Wars was made better because George Lucas had great ideas, and then he had people help him with it. You know, with the prequels, it was just a little too much George control, and I say that lovingly because I think Force Awakens has made people more appreciative specifically of the prequels. Nobody ever craps on the originals. People crap on the prequels, but I think there has been more of an acceptance and a love for the prequels in light of Force Awakens. Not because necessarily people are saying, oh, prequels are way better, but just there is a very clear absence of George Lucas in The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's most notable in the cinematography.
Right.
You know, it's a very modern form of cinematography. You know, George was not a fan of zooming in and zooming out or like coming in at characters from weird angles. You know, there's nothing wrong with that cinematography. It's just it's never been done in Star Wars before. So it's jarring to me.
Yeah. George always shot Star Wars as if it were a documentary.
Yep.
And there's the occasional, you know, snap zoom. We get at least one of those in Attack of the Clones. And then there's the huge opening tracking shot in Revenge of the Sith. You know, he you know, experimented, you know, a handful of times. And, of course, you also get the spinning camera shot in Revenge of the Sith when the missiles are being fired at Anakin. And he does spinning. That's a good trick. You know?
Yeah.
But,
well, I think,
but it wasn't overly prevalent.
Right.
Like it was in The Force Awakens.
Right. And again, it's fine. And it fits in the mythos. But I think at the end of the day, as a Star Wars community, there is going to be a grieving process, a grieving of George Lucas, you know, and I mean that in a reality because Star Wars is no longer being directed by one person. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to have all these different hands in it. Disney controls it, which I'll still say is disconcerting to me. I don't completely trust Disney, and I know a lot of people think Disney can do no wrong, but they do lots of wrong, in my opinion. And what I mean by that is they over-commercialize things, and I really fear for Star Wars. Like, I really do fear that Episode 9 is not going to have a resolution. It's going to be like, no, we're going to have another trilogy, and before you know it, we're going to have Episode 31, Star Wars. You know, like, I don't want that. I do not want that. And that's not saying I won't see it or I won't like it, but to make, you know, Homer, for instance, when he wrote the Iliad and the Odyssey, he didn't keep wanting to write other stories. He had a story to write and he told it. And now we can still dive, you know, we still dive into it thousands of years later. Star Wars can be that. It can be a modern myth without giving us a bajillion chapters. So all that aside, I think that as a fan community, there is a certain level of grief over losing George Lucas as the head of that saga. I think it will take some getting used to, and it is. It's easy to look at Force Awakens and pick out all the things that are wrong with it because of that. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, George Lucas created, you know, that beautiful sandbox, and we're all welcome to play in it. And now we have new people who are giving us new toys to play with and giving us new stories to play in that aren't George Lucas. I think there is something that'll always be missing from Star Wars without George Lucas. And I think when the sequel trilogy is done, we're going to have a very clear vision of what this story did. But, you know, I think absolutely as a community of Star Wars fans, at some point we're going to have to just admit, yep, George Lucas isn't making these anymore. And when we're able to do that and accept it, we'll be able to move on and really just sink our teeth into these new Star Wars films like we've always done. You know, Rogue One, the Han Solo film, you know, all these movies. We'll get so much more out of them once we at least accept the fact that George Lucas is not going to be doing anything anymore.
Right.
I also think it's important that, you know, Disney becomes wary of pandering. And what I mean by that is specifically kind of, we mentioned it even in the episode tonight, the use of Boba Fett in the comic series. It's pandering. Mm-hmm. It's pandering to fans. Like, oh, people love the way Boba Fett looks. Throw him in here. Even if it literally does nothing, if not hurt the story. You know, I mean, according to the Star Wars comics, Boba Fett is the one who figures out that Luke is Vader's father and reveals that to him. That should not be Boba Fett's role. I'm sorry. Like, that is some crappy storytelling. I was talking to Greg about this the other day. I said, you know, I've kind of stopped reading a lot of the comics because they've gotten so bad, in my opinion. And I'm talking specifically about the Star Wars and Vader line. And I know Vader's coming to an end, but the Star Wars line, it's so pandering that I haven't read one in a while, but I remember one of the last ones, well, not one of the last ones, but not so long ago, when the big three was all using lightsabers in an arena battle. Get the hell out of here. Like, that's stupider story writing than anything we saw in the prequels in my book. I don't want to see Han Solo fighting with a lightsaber. That's not Han Solo. And also, the way Han handles the lightsaber in Empire kind of indicates that he's never used that thing before, which I liked. He shouldn't. He's not a Jedi. You know, like, don't pander to us. It cheapens us as fans. Like, we don't need the thrills. We want good content. At least I do. So, yeah. For a kid, you know, a kid reads that comic, like, this is so cool. I love Han and I love lightsabers. They're together. Yay. But, right. You know, I mean, I think obviously as adult fans, we do want something more from it.
Yeah. So. And I think that's something that, you know, obviously George could never be called guilty of doing, is pandering to fans. You know, obviously that's something that, you know, he, you know, could be considered a critique of him if you wanted to go that way. He did it his way. Yeah. And I think one of the, and I'm going to have to wait and see after the trilogy is done, and just give me my final thought, you know, involving Force Awakens, not having George. And then we'll wrap up this episode. But the biggest difference that I'm seeing between what George was involved with and The Force Awakens is the most important thing to George was the story. The most important thing in The Force Awakens is the characters. Mm-hmm. And both of those have their good points and bad points. It's almost impossible to find any project out there that has the, you know, wonderful blending of both. Because you either have, you know, awesome story movies or you have awesome character movies out there. It's really difficult to interweave, you know, a brilliant story and brilliant characters together in a seamless film nowadays. And while I love the dedication to character that we got in The Force Awakens, the lack of, you know, the bigger picture that we see in The Force Awakens has me a little bit nervous. I think we're going to get more of that bigger picture going forward. And so that's why I'm going to have to wait and see when we get the rest of the trilogy. But that was something that George Lucas never lost sight of, was the bigger picture, the end goal, what this was supposed to be. And sometimes that affected the way he wrote characters, you know, detrimentally. And so it's just one of those things. It's a trade-off. And I think that's, you just got to be careful of that, I think. And that's one of the biggest differences I'm seeing. And I'm just, you know, wondering how that's all going to, you know, resolve itself moving forward, or if it will resolve itself moving forward.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I think it will. But that's a good point. Yeah, I never actually thought about it like that. Because, when you were saying George Lucas was more concerned about story, I was wondering where you're going to go with that, because I was going to say, well, in the prequels, I think he was more concerned about technology than story, to be honest. I really do, and I don't say that as a slam. I just think it's the reality of it. That's a great comparison, because George was more concerned about telling a mythological story, and the characters are more of their pieces within that story, where mm-hmm. you're absolutely right. Force Awakens' primary concern, and it does make sense as to why they're doing that, is they want you to fall in love with their new big characters, because right. it's going to be such huge importance in order for this new saga to work.
Right.
Because exactly. if the whole movie you're just sitting there like, oh my God, when am I going to see Han? Or like, where's Luke? Or where's Leia? You know, if you're just thinking that the whole time, this isn't their story anymore. We've got to move it beyond that. So that's why it is that the focus is making you really like Rey and really like Finn and really like Poe and care about Kylo, you know. Yeah.
It's just one of those things where, you know, coming out of Revenge of the Sith or something, your favorite moments were, you know, that final confrontation between Anakin and Obi-Wan, you know, mm-hmm. Anakin turning to the dark side, these big important story pieces. And then coming out of The Force Awakens, it's like your favorite parts are, oh, Rey, or, you know, Poe or Kylo Ren. You know, it's just one of those things I've noticed, is that, you know, it's less the story beats. It's more the characters that are your favorite moments from The Force Awakens, at least from what I've been seeing and hearing. So it's just one of those interesting things I've been noticing and been thinking about. So
that's some good stuff.
Well, thanks. But before we wrap this up,
yeah,
we had a matchup that you came up with, Carl. So what are we doing for our next episode here?
Well, our next matchup is going to be indicative of hopefully what we'll be recording about our next episode on, kind of in a way as well. Jason and I have both read Bloodlines by Claudia Gray. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. It's, to me, this tied for the best novel in the new canon, with Lords of the Sith. The majority of this new canon has been weak for me, but Bloodlines is unbelievable. I'm actually reading Lost Stars right now, also by Claudia Gray, which is a YA novel, but it's really good.
Very good.
She's a great writer.
I haven't got it yet.
Okay. John Jackson Miller could learn a thing or two from her. and I mean that in all honesty. She's a million times better author than him. But she writes characters better, and she writes emotion better. She's just a better author in my book. Hey, my book, literature. Anyway, but it's, you know, obviously, looking at Force Awakens, our big three are in a very different place than where they were in the EU.
Right.
So, again, we're hoping that our next episode, we're trying to get a good special guest on, because there's a lot of great people out there. But we have somebody in mind. We're just going to make sure we can coordinate schedules. But we really want to discuss in our next episode Bloodlines in general, but also kind of comparing the new canon big three to the EU big three, because they're very different mm-hmm. characters.
Right.
So if you haven't read Bloodlines, highly recommend that you do, because we probably will tell, you know, we are going to discuss spoilers while we're discussing that next week.
Yes.
So heads up, that's not to try to, you know, exclude folks from listening, but, kind of want to kind of a two-part discussion in the next episode of looking at Bloodlines as a novel, but also then kind of comparing, you know, the difference of where these characters went in light mm-hmm. of the old and now the new canon. But all that aside, our next matchup is a bleeding of the old and the new canon. I thought it'd be fun to do a matchup between Darth Kytus, so the fallen Jason Solo, the son of Han and Leia, versus Kylo Ren, the fallen son of Han and Leia.
Right.
So
This is going to be great. I think this will be close, and I can't wait to see what people say about this. I'm really curious. And we don't want to stoke up, you know, the fires of Legends versus new canon, folks. You know, we just want to have fun with this matchup. So keep your responses, you know, civil and everything. So don't vote based on, you know,
I hate whether, the new EU, or like, right. I hate the new canon. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Don't vote based on that. Just vote based on the characters themselves, please. Yes.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point of the next episode, too, isn't to necessarily diminish one or the other, but just simply say, hey, look, these are two really different things.
Exactly. You know, and
kind of look at those differences. So, so please be sure to respond to this matchup of Darth Kitus versus Kylo Ren.
Mm-hmm. And if they want to respond to that, or, you know, just comment on anything else from the show, where can they do that, Carl?
On Facebook, facebook.com/wampaslayerpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampaslayer, or shoot us an email at wampaslayerpodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent. And is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up this episode?
Let us all as a community grieve the great George Lucas. Not because he's dead.
not because he's dead, just because he's left us.
Yes, he will be a Force ghost.
Yes. He'll show up and say, faster, more intense. And that will wrap up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 186, our top 5 quotes. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.